You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Clint Clifton, and I'm with the one and only ministry ninja, Peyton Jones. Hey, Peyton, how you doing?
Hey, man. Good to be here again.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You're always fun to hang out with. Always have a good time when I talk to you. Peyton, you know, if there were like a university or like a place in the world where you could go, or all the church planner types of the world could go and get a solid education, the 101 like premier course would be called Plantology.
Yeah, baby.
And you literally wrote the book, Church Plantology.
Yes.
The study of planting churches.
Apparently there will not be a 201. My wife says she wants to stay married.
Stop writing books. Yes. Well, Church Plantology is an incredible book. It's a reference book, honestly. I mean, it's a thing that you're going to need to keep on your shelf, pull on and off all throughout your church planting journey. It's the art and science of planting churches, and you can get this thing anywhere. I've seen it propping up tables and, you know, holding doors open. It's all over the place. It's like a big brick.
Yeah, it's often on display in their
diet. You should do one of those like elf on the shelf deals and like tweet it out all over the place.
South, people give it out at Halloween in candy.
Oh, bars. Yeah. You might get it dropped in your bag.
Yeah, with big candy bars.
Well, seriously, Plantology is a great book. Over at newchurches.com, we're very excited about Plantology and want you to spend time using that. Zondervan partnered with Peyton on that, and they've produced a really great resource that you should be really proud of, Peyton. So thanks for all the hard work on that.
Oh, thank you, man.
So we're gonna talk about church planting and money in this episode. And the title of the episode is going to give away the answer to our first question. But the title of the episode is Church Planting is Free. And so, Peyton, I have a question for you. The question is, how much does it cost to plant a church?
It costs exactly $0 to plant a church.
Correct answer. Thank you.
Yes.
Why in the world did you say that? Some people are going to hear you say that and they're going to think, what? That doesn't sound right.
Well, you know, it's funny because church planting and church starting, it's very expensive to start a church, right? You got to get enough money for a website. You can spend money. I'm not against spending money, but you don't have to. The reason I'm saying that is when I started church planting, I was planting internationally. So it was free. I mean, there was no church planting funding. There was no church planting money. Pastors often of established churches couldn't afford to be paid. Things were done volunteer. They were part-time or bivocational. So I got into bivocational church planting and started planting for free. We didn't take offering. We didn't do any of that. We'd meet in public spaces like Starbucks or whatever. And that's where the people were. So we started with preaching the gospel, watering through discipleship, and reaping a harvest, which we would call a church plant, right?
Right.
It's in the name, church planting. So water and reap.
Right. Yeah. So the point of this episode is to get you to walk away from it. If you're a church planner or an aspiring church planner with this like baseline idea that church planting is free, because everything that church planting is, all the real essence of church planting, making disciples, sharing Jesus with others, organizing Christians for future ministry and mission, all of those things are things that are by and large done totally free in most of the world by most Christians. And so church planting itself is free. And so if you start with a baseline assumption that church planting is free, then every dollar you get your hand on, every resource you get your hand on, every piece of every building or brick and mortar or piece of equipment you get your hand on is like a grace. It's like a benefit that the Lord has entrusted to you to put gasoline on the fire of the reality that you can do all of this for free. All the fundamental things that are needed for church ministry are really free. And if you start there, I think you'll have a lot more positive experience when it comes to resources and church planting. In your experience, Peyton, what's the average church planter's sort of demeanor toward resources?
Well, I mean, typically they think that you need a bag load of cash to plant a church. And, you know, it's kind of like that old maxim, church planting and money, hard to get them in the same room, right? It's not easy. You end up spending a good chunk of your time actually trying to raise money to basically throw a church service that people either do or do not come to. And if you're spending the majority of your time doing that, like you can just imagine like the Apostle Paul, get in a time machine, go back, tell him what you're doing. And Paul's either going to say, why are you doing all that? Or he's going to smack his head and say, why didn't I think of doing it that way?
Right.
And I think you know which of the two responses you would get from Paul. Paul's most likely going to say, you don't have to do all that. I didn't do all that.
Yeah. So there are, so hear me first and foremost, church planting's free. You don't need money to plant a church. You can step out and plant churches without any resources. That should never, the lack of resources should never be an excuse for you not doing what God's put in your heart to do, what he's called you to do. However, for those churches that do utilize resources, that are given resources or raise those resources, or members of the church itself contribute money that gets, that you get to use for the gospel, there are a number of revenue sources that, you know, come into a church plant. In the first year of a church's life, let's talk about some of the revenue sources that you see there. You name one and then I'll name one. What's a revenue source that a church plant has?
Well, the first revenue source would be like a sending church.
Yeah.
A church that wants to send you out and fund you.
Yeah. And in your experience, Peyton, like today, right now, 2022, when a sending church is really bought in and they're really kind of all in, what kind of dollars are they actually giving? Like if you were to put it in a range or say, what are you seeing?
You know, I typically see less than 1,000 per church plant, you know, somewhere around the,
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. Most churches are modestly sized, and $1,000 it stings a little bit, you know, in their in their budget. It depends on your context and where you are and how big your sending church is and how big their budget is, that sort of thing. But it's pretty common for it to be less than $1,000. So just gauge your expectations a little bit. That's not going to be, that's not going to fully fund anything, if, especially if you're trying to have a, you know, a facility and a staff and a vocational workers and do some, spend some money on ministry. It's going to be challenging to do it on the resources from that alone. So another revenue source that churches sometimes have in their first year is the giving of the actual congregation, the core team, or the small group of people that comes together. Peyton, in your church planting work, when have you started collecting an offering and utilizing those resources within the church?
Yeah, I would say that we started pretty early on, just because we believed that part of being a Christian was to give.
Yeah,
and so we didn't have any hang-ups about doing that. We saw it as part of the worship.
Yeah.
So we would teach people that from day one. But trying to get people to tithe, right? Like I know there's a whole theological argument about tithing.
Right.
But we never pushed for that. We would just tell people, hey, give what's on your heart.
Yeah.
And we would teach them cheerful giving. We never put a denomination on it, a money amount, a percentage. We just tell them, hey, just give what you think you should give. Right. And we typically found that if we trusted people to give out of worship, it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I mean, that's been my experience as well. We're on different coasts. You know, I'm over on the East Coast, you're on the West Coast. But that's been totally my experience. People have always exceeded my expectations in terms of their generosity.
Yeah.
I'm challenged at times by how generous some of our people are, even at times that kind of the narrative is new Christians don't give, you know, it takes them forever to start. And that's not been my experience. people as they get excited about the ministry, they contribute to it. And as the, you know, it's like commensurate with how much they trust the church and trust the leadership and that sort of thing. But I've found Christians to be overwhelmingly generous when they really can believe in the mission of what you're doing. Is that your experience as well?
100%. And in fact, I've always been the biggest bottleneck where I've kind of pretended like it's not that important. And, you know, I do want to kind of back up and just say this into this podcast, nothing wrong with raising money for your right. church. I mean, the apostles from day one in Jerusalem, they started, you know, taking a collection and what have you. So there's nothing wrong with that. But if you look at what it went to, it went towards supporting them so they could multiply leaders. And then it also went to help the people that were staying longer in Jerusalem and the widows and orphans. So you look at that and you go, okay, that's really good. I think a lot of the stuff that we raise money for yeah. is stuff that's not necessary and not always helpful. But yes, as soon as I stop being the bottleneck, though, like being almost embarrassed right. about collecting funds, then it got a lot easier. And I'll just tell a quick story. I remember when we were planting in urban Long Beach and we were reaching homeless people like crazy. And I would tell the homeless people, hey, you don't have to give. And, you know, I had it only set up for electronic giving instead of like an offering. And one of the homeless people said to me, hey, I can't give here. And I said, oh, brother, we don't want to burden you. And the homeless guy's response changed everything forever for me, where it solidified what I already knew and what I've already just said. But it was like a rebuke to me. He said, hey, are you actually going to rob me from worshiping God with my finances? And I was like, whoa, it's a homeless dude. And he wants to give out of what he has to yeah. God. And that was so humbling.
Yeah. You know, I think when we think about the subject of church planting really being free at the base, we got to consider that most churches around the world are not led by full-time vocational pastors. I mean, I haven't done a study or anything, Peyton, but I've got to imagine that our context here where we see, you know, churches with professional pastors that have been to school for many, many years and earned high-speed degrees and all of that is not the norm around the world. I mean, the gospel has spread, you know, all over the world, north and south, east and west, across mountains and oceans. It's come all this way, and it did not do it on the backs of people who were paid for that work. Although there's, you know, there's a lot of generosity involved in Christian mission, it is not the norm that churches around the world are led by paid vocational pastors. Many churches are led by volunteer pastors. In our context, pastoring a small like neighborhood church in a volunteer capacity, though, it's kind of frowned on. And I don't know if frowned on is the right way to say it, but it's not seen as legitimate as the church down the street that has, you know, a staff and a payroll and a facility and a groundskeeper and those sorts of things. What are some of the advantages, though? Let's like advocate for just a minute. What are some of the advantages of the small, nimble church with volunteer pastor?
Well, one of the things that has always been helpful for me is team planting. So right away, I don't plant as the solo planter.
Yeah,
I hardwire a church for multiplication. I would say, in echoing your statement about it didn't come on the back of full-time paid missionaries, you're right, or planters, the gospel spread in the first century on the back of bivocational leaders. In fact, the Apostle Paul for 18 months goes and camps out in Corinth. Now, he's beat up and bruised. You know, at the end of his second missionary journey, he's being hounded and harried from town to village to hamlet, and he's beaten black and blue. He's been stoned to death, and he cannot keep but two steps ahead. A couple days in, they find him again. They persecute him. They drive him out. So when he goes to Corinth, he does not preach the gospel. He just works with his hands, and he camps out there for 18 months. Finally, he gets caught up. Silas and Timothy catch up to him. Mm-hmm. But Paul is actually, during that time, setting up the groundwork for the greatest kingdom expansion ever by working with his hands. If you ever look at the 32 people, the 32 interchangeable missionaries that Paul's shipping all over Asia Minor and Macedonia and everywhere else, all around the Mediterranean, you got to ask yourself, well, we know Paul, you know, says he worked with his hands. What about everyone else? Well, Priscilla and Aquila have homes in Ephesus, Rome, and Corinth. You had to be loaded These guys had a tent-making empire. Paul joins their franchise, and through these missionaries, on the backs of their tent-making franchise empire, the gospel spreads. These planters that Paul trained were able to go anywhere, anytime, to anyone, simply because they were bivocational. And I learned that the hard way. I was on staff at – well, I wasn't on staff. I was paid missionary at Lloyd Jones's church, Martin Lloyd Jones in Wales, UK. And 9/11 hit. My support dried up in half overnight. And I had been the evangelist. And I was doing all the hard stuff, Clint, like door-to-door, all that stuff. And overnight, I had to go work with a company called Manpower. They're all over the world, right? Like Scab. You go in. I go into this factory. And I'm working on this assembly line. And within 2 weeks, man, three people get saved. After a year being the full-time evangelist, paid for on mission funds, no fruit. To 2 weeks later, three people on the factory, the assembly line coming, working a conveyor belt, people coming to faith. And I thought, man, this is why Paul did what he did. Okay, I'm sold. And for the next, even New Breed today, I'm not full-time on staff at New Breed.
Right.
Because it just started something for me to where I'm like, you know what, I'm going to always work another job to not be a burden to the church so the gospel can spread faster.
All right, man, that's inspiring, honestly. Two of the biggest expenses for churches, personnel, we've already talked about, and facilities. I mean, I see some of the insanity that happens around churches and facilities, and I'm perplexed. I mean, churches, and if I don't mean to be offensive if your church is doing this, but I will be offensive, I guess. But churches are investing millions and millions and millions of dollars that they don't have, like on a promise of a mortgage for a long time into the future. They're doing that. At the sake of like all ministry and mission, with some kind of presumption that the church is going to exist at that time when they cannot guarantee that in any way, shape, or form. And I just think, man, we should be bold. We should absolutely be bold. We should take big steps of faith. But most of the churches in my context, the steps of faith they're encouraged to take congregationally are not steps of generosity. They're to send people out on mission around the world. They're steps to sort of build bigger barns for themselves. And so that all the way to the reality that you know, it doesn't seem very legitimate for churches to start in free facilities, like in homes or, you know, parks or community centers or public libraries or things like that these days. Peyton, like recalibrate our minds about that. Like, why should we consider starting a church small on volunteers that meets in free facilities in the beginning?
Well, there's two major bottlenecks to multiplication, and multiplication bottlenecks at leadership pipeline, and it also bottlenecks at facilities. So if you take those out, right, like if both of those are hinged around money, we don't have the money to bring someone on and train them. So if from day one, those are not bottlenecks, those things don't revolve around money, right? You've got a team of leaders who can train and disciple. You know, they're all carrying their full-time or part-time jobs, but they're able to not be bottlenecked by money, then you're going to be able to multiply. This is why the micro church movement right now, and a micro church, by the way, could be 100 people, could be 200 people. The micro church is a missional-based affinity group. They're on mission. There are people that are gathering around a common mission. So you can have a gathering, kind of like Rome, you know, to the churches that are in Rome, all these house churches, Jerusalem, right? They had temple courts. That was their public space gathering.
Yeah.
And then they had house to house. So we very much met like that. I mean, I started my first church in a Starbucks. And we met, we would call that temple courts, right? We had about 50 people talking about Jesus, most of them non-believers who got saved one by one. But then we would take it into the house. There we would do prayer, communion, all the things that you would associate with like a Sunday gathering. We'd say, well, that's for us. Well, that eventually changed too. But each one of those little small groups, these little house groups, eventually became a church planting core team. And we kind of stumbled into that. We didn't know what we're doing. But again, it didn't cost anything for us to meet homes, didn't cost anything to meet in Starbucks. So if you can remove the money bottleneck, multiplication goes into high gear.
Absolutely. Well, Peyton, thank you. Those are pretty novel thoughts in church planting, and not a lot of folks are talking about that. Most of the conversations that center around money are about how to get more of it. But I think if we put our emphasis on how to do more ministry on less, we might find that we're able to actually accomplish more for the kingdom, and that ministry resources would flow to our way more readily if there was an obvious progress of the ministry happening on small resources. You know, I reminded of that scriptural principle that says, if you're faithful with little, you'll be faithful with much. Like God gives more resources to those who manage few resources really well. And I think that principle applies in church planting.
Yeah, definitely. There is one, I don't mean to pitch a book out here again, but I did write a book called Reaching the Unreached, Becoming Raiders of the Lost Art, which actually deals quite a bit with ministry and public space. Because when you look at what Jesus did stuff for free outside.
Right.
When you look at what the apostles did, they did stuff for free outside. And I think that's a lost art. If the church could get back to mastering that art, which I think COVID was kind of God tipping the hand, like, you can do this. You can get back outside and do stuff for free. I think we got a taste, but I'm not sure we swallowed the pill yet.
Yeah. That's great, Peyton. Well, Peyton, again, as always, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for sharing your wisdom with us and your experience in church planting.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
It is so important that your church be prepared with an appropriate response when someone reports some sort of sexual or physical or emotional abuse. We've got a tool that's going to help you do this. It's called Becoming a Church That Cares Well for the Abused. This video course brings together top experts from various fields, and it's designed to help you and your leaders understand and implement the best practices in the event of an abuse scenario at your church or your school or ministry. You can find everything that you need to offer the course. It's totally free, including the videos and a handbook. You can find everything over at newchurches.com.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.